Welcome to Ladies with Gumption. This is episode 177, Emotional Damage. And yes, I chose that title just so I could say that. If you're wondering why we are a little bit behind this week, it's because we are still recovering from Waldmore sex. So there you go. That's what we're going to tell ourselves. Anyways, I am Jessica, and I am one third of the Ladies with Gumption. And the other two are?
May.
And Tatiana.
We recap DCTV in a flash. You can find us on Twitter at DCTV Gumption. You can send us asks on Tumblr, ladieswithgumption.tumblr.com, or you can send us your feedback on the episodes to our Gmail account, ladieswithgumption@gmail.com. You're probably listening to this podcast on one of many platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. Or if you are a special, special person, then you're listening to us on Patreon. And we say thank you to you. We love you. To show our love, we give you episodes 24 hours in advance. And we also give you extra stuff outside of the DCverse or premium DC shows. So, for example, that's where we do Doom Patrol. Peacemaker will eventually be done. We also do premium Marvel content, movies. We've done Netflix shows. Recently, we did You Season 3, and coming up, we're going to do Encanto. So if you're an Encanto fan and your favorite song is not We Don't Talk About Bruno, I don't know. I don't know what else to say. Anyway, we are not going to talk about Bruno a lot on that episode coming up, so stick around for that. In the news, you know, well, something big actually did happen. It happened like last Friday, though. But Grant signed on for a one-year deal to greenlight The Flash Season 9. So it is highly, highly likely that we will get a Season 9 of The Flash. Who else is going to be on it other than Grant? I have no clue. Oh. But what did you guys think about the news when you heard it?
I was slightly actually surprised, and I was surprised that I was surprised. Because obviously we hadn't heard that it was the last season yet, so there's no reason to think it was. But since fandom keeps telling itself it's coming to an end, I guess we just believe them. But I'm glad that, you know, Grant is getting what he's due. I just hope that Candace also signs on if he does.
This is one thing on the announcement that they weren't really clear about it. It was kind of like in the gray area. Because it mentioned that his salary was $200,000 an episode, and I'm wondering if that's his current salary, or I feel like it's his current salary, and then he's getting a sizable raise increase. From that, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. I guess that makes sense, yeah, because he's already increased a couple times since he started.
He had to have increased to get to season eight, too.
Yeah.
Not so humble brag. I think Steven was only making $175 in his final season.
Well, we're about to beat Arrow. Arrow had 8 seasons. We're going to have 9. So yeah, we did what we came to do. No, it's actually possible. I don't know. We'll see if they try to round it out and do 10 seasons and hit 2024. That might be what they want to do. But yeah, basically, I just hope that Candace, even though like I want her to be free to do other things, it is a good check, and I don't want to have a season or two without Iris randomly. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't as surprised just because before the pandemic hit, they were in talks to sign multi-year deals. So, I guess signing on for season 9 is the next step. And I think they mentioned, too, that there was going to be he's going to be in 15 episodes. So, I feel like if Candace does sign on, she might get a similar deal, and that might free her up to do other things too. So less time spent in Vancouver means less.
If she signed on to do like 13, because like Black Lightning seasons were 13 episode seasons, and then you know Nafisa is free to do movies and stuff like that. So
that's true.
Yeah,
that's.
And I feel like I do know that people want her to leave, but I also feel like leaving the show, I just want her to carry on the Iris story. So like if she leaves, it would just be like sad because the show is not going to be.
And I feel like if you stayed here like this long and you know like the end is right around the corner, I feel like I would want to like finish it out,
see it through. But what
do we th- well this is also kind of some news that we didn't really talk about before, but Danielle is pregnant again. So, and then Jesse L. Martin also had like a promo little interview with some CW news station, like talked about
the talk.
We learned from that that there's a possibility of Law and Order return, right?
Yeah, I think they were talking about, yes, we can hear you now. I think they were talking about like a revival for that show, and you know he was on it, so he probably could come back to do that. I don't think they talked anything about like him coming back for The Flash season 9, though.
Right. I mean, he's already kind of like in a reduced capacity, so I'm sure.
So what do we think about, because of the season 8 people signed on, the only, like, the main people were Grant, Jesse, Candace, and Danielle. So Grant has signed on for season 9. Mm-hmm. We want Candace to sign on for season 9. But do you have any thoughts about whether they'll be the last two standing, or will Danielle just, like, you know?
I think Danielle's going to see it through. Yeah, let's be honest. Let's not.
Even with baby number 2 on the way?
Even with baby number 2?
I feel like the only reason she would leave is because of baby number 2, but if she didn't leave for baby number 1, right, I doubt that she's going to be like, well, I'm going to leave, even though she did say that she wishes she spent more time with her child, so
maybe
I don't know.
Maybe she'll take, like, a longer break. I don't think she'll leave entirely, but she might be actually gone for more than, like, one episode.
Yeah. I think she'll be out for several, and I don't know how her maternity stuff will work this year, like whether she'll be out.
Well, because last year, episodes, you know, COVID kind of saved her, because COVID took up a lot of her maternity leave.
Mm.
This year, or this time around, whenever they start filming again, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, I mean,
but
even
we'll
for
see,
like the rest of the season, because
she's showing already, like, now. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how far along she is and what that means for the rest.
She's
got to
be at least in her second trimester, because that's usually when you announce, right? So
yeah,
anyways, this week Camrys directed his very first episode of TV, Batwoman episode, that we'll be discussing shortly, to kind of celebrate that and promote that. Candace, Ozzy, Javicia, and Cam did a cooking live where they were cooking cauliflower, like a sweet and sour cauliflower, and I think I might be the only one that watched it. It was like the most, it's like chaotic good. It was so funny. they were all just like, Cam, I don't even know how he like survives, because he couldn't like work the stove. It was really cute, because I guess like the vibe is that Candace is always like the exemplary student, but this time she kind of slipped up because she put the cornstarch in the wrong pot at the wrong time. And Ozzy is just like she's trying to get an A so bad for Javicia. Like, but she forgot like the main ingredient. Like, she had broccoli instead of cauliflower. So when Candace made the mistake, she's like, this is my shot. I can get in there. But I don't know if it's saved anywhere. But if it is, then you should go take a look, because it's just like, it's so hilarious. All of them
are
vibing together.
They like end up on Instagram, though, in the video section, right?
Hmm? I think you have to save
the video
it.
Section? Let me see. I'm going to stalk them right now. Hold on.
If you can watch it, I would suggest going back and watching it, because it's just like so funny. But I'm not sure if Ozzy saved it, because like, they're usually like only an hour, and they went over an hour. They're cooking cauliflower, and the live was over an hour long.
Oh, it is saved, so you can go watch it.
You can enjoy the mess that was this live. It was so funny. But yeah, that's just like fun stuff that was happening. And then finally, we also got more Flash news. Rick Cosnett is confirmed to be returning for 3 episodes in season 8. So he's coming back for multiple episodes. And there's a possibility, now that we know that Grant has signed on to season 9, there is an open door, maybe, that Rick comes back in season 9 as well in some kind of recurring type role. Mm. So what do we think this means in terms of who he's playing or what kind of role he'll play in the back half of
season
8?
Please be Cobalt Blue, for the love of
please,
God.
Please, God.
Exactly. It's what we deserve.
They're not going to make him cobalt blue. Like, what is the point, right? Like,
yeah.
We've been all wanting this for so long. And I think
I feel better about my prediction now that it's going to happen, that, you know, Twin 1 and Twin 2 are just going to, like, on relationship.
Right. Miss Kylie so much that now.
Please retcon it.
Yeah. And Rick too, like, as an actor, I prefer when he's playing evil characters because I feel like he just gets more into it.
Yeah, he has that energy.
Yeah, he has energy with that. So, you know, I'm all for that. So let it happen. And that would be fantastic. And I think that would be really interesting too if, like, Iris and Barry remember who he was.
Yes,
exactly. He's now a villain, and there's like, can be a lot of conflict there. So, good times, hopefully.
So leading, well, not even leading. There's no real segue for that into the main body, but that's where we're going. So we're gonna the format for the shows that you have this week. Joys, no joys. We'll give feedback, and we'll crown a lady consumption of the week. Tati is going to be our host this week, and she's going to take it away. Side A, Naomi arrival event. Let's go. Let's get it.
Yes. This week's episode of Naomi was called Enigma. Naomi discovers more about her past, but she must come to terms with all the secrets that have been kept from her and who has been keeping them. Her parents. And as the newly empowered teen continues her training with Dee and finds the courage to confront Zimbardo, she must balance her super life with her school life when Annabelle, Anthony, and Jacob push Naomi to campaign for class president over the dire issue of snacks in the vending machine. Directed by Nima Barnett and written by Stephanie Coggins. What sparked joy?
I do like this episode that it had Naomi contending more with her past, the mystery, learning that, I think that she finally did learn that there was the 29 because she read the inscription on the little disc that she had, and actually actively tracking down Akira, because I think that she's a very interesting character who, you know, has an interesting relationship with Zimbardo, and kind of throwing Naomi into the middle of all that makes it also interesting for the show. And just the fact that she is asserting herself more and that she wants to know more about her past. She's telling her parents she wants to know more about her past, and then inviting Dee over to dinner with her parents makes all of that kind of bringing the two worlds together, so to speak, for her is really fascinating. And I think that she, the way that she's handling it on that end is pretty good, and has been great to watch so far. I love that Dee is like that kind of guardian who she can talk to that is like a parent figure, but not her parents. Like, he's the guy she can call up and be like, can you come pick me up? I'm stuck here, or, you know, whatever. And he's always there for her. And I think that that's really interesting. I also like that Dee, we got more on Dee, like the reason he was not on Earth for 2 years has to do with somebody he loved. I feel like it's a very tragic story, but I like that we're getting little bits and pieces of his story, because I feel like the adults on the show are very fascinating. And I like when we do learn more about them. I continue to love Annabelle and Naomi's friendship. I think it's really strong. You know, she's sort of the level-headed one when Naomi just wants to go off and figure things out. And Annabelle's just a really strong character. And I do wish that, like, we got a little bit more of her a lot of the time versus, like, everybody else in her little group. What else? Just, like, I'm still intrigued by the mystery of it all. I like the fact that Naomi finally, I guess, picked someone to be in a relationship with, because we were just going around a lot. And I feel like, as much as I do like her vibe with Lourdes, I don't feel like Lourdes is a strong enough character. So Nathan was the next option to be the primary love interest. And I feel like it works because they have history together. He seems like he's there for her, and they just have a lot of chemistry. So I did enjoy the fact that they finally did seem like they're getting together. I don't know for how long, but, you know, the fact that...
Girl, I swear to God, if we move on this merry-go-round one more time...
But it was rooting for Nathan, so I'm glad that that happened for them. So hopefully it'll stick for a little bit and maybe give him a boost too. Like, give him more screen time. We get to learn more about him so he can become like more of a full-fledged character versus just a part of the general support that Naomi has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very happy that, first of all, that the merry-go-round just came back around to Nathan in this episode, because I just feel the vibes. Like, I vibe with him a lot, and him and Naomi together. I really like their chemistry. And I just feel like he gets Naomi the most at this point, especially because, like, he was the only one when people were like, yes, Naomi, you should do class president and get us better snacks. And he's like, you don't really want to do this. And I could tell, like, you know, I could tell just looking at her when they're like, yeah, you should do it. She didn't want to do that. And so I feel like that, you know, this is another reason why Anthony's at the bottom of the totem pole, because he didn't realize she didn't want to do that. So I, you know, and I just feel like the way their conversations and how he kind of like has her back and has supported her, they just kind of mesh really well. So I'm glad Naomi seemed to choose him back. At the montage after like three episodes of content was a little bit over the top, but it was, you know, still cute nonetheless. And I just hope that this is the end of the constant like rotating like love interest roulette or whatever. Because I feel like that's the weakest part of the show. So if we could just stick with one for a while, they don't have to be there forever. You know, I still don't know why they broke up in the first place. So whatever that's going on, but at least let's concentrate on one person for a while. I think that that's a good direction. Hopefully that's the direction we're moving in. The dinner with Dee and her parents was super awkward, but very entertaining. Just like, especially with her dad and Dee just kind of like going back and forth with the sparks and, you know, where did you say you were again? It's like, why didn't you tell her who she was again? You know, like all that kind of like back and forth. It was very, and like her mom offering Dee chicken and Naomi be like, he has wings, mom.
So I was like, is that bacon and vegetarian?
Right.
It's kind of funny too, because at one point I like tweeted like GIF is like, the chicken was lovely. And it just like matched with the vibe so well because it was just so awkward and chicken. It was kind of an entertaining scene. I liked learning, I agree with you about Dee's backstory. I feel like we're getting more layers to him and the fact that, you know, there is a someone out there. I feel like Dee is holding it down for the, you know, the auntie and wine mom demographic that watch the show. Like, he's like holding down that side of the demographic for everybody. Because he's just like a mystery and women seem to love him. I like that the Scooby Gang was minimal and that their time together was like a fun escape room, because it's like just like a normal thing. But I do agree with you that I like her interactions better when it's like her and Annabelle as a duo, or the plus of her like the boyfriend Jacob, and it's a trio of them and just them, because this, you have like all the bases covered. So I like that even when they were in the group, she and Jacob, you know, had their own side thing of trying to figure out how to find somebody that could, I forget, some kind of like turning machine or whatever to either decode the disc or do something with the disc or whatever. But that's how she got led to.
Yeah, the Turing machine.
That's how she found out about Akira. Yeah. And so, and I like when she did find Akira, we got a lot more information about, I guess, 29 is Earth 29. And you, a little bit more understanding of maybe what Zimbada may have done. And all these like clues are starting to fall into place about, well, where Naomi's from and what happened. So I like getting more of the mystery of what's happening.
I agree with that. I like that we're finally getting to piece together more of the backstory. It's still like more like maybe like we still have many more questions about where Naomi comes from and why she's so important. But I like that we're getting to flesh out the world that she comes from and like what happened with Zimbada or Dee or Akira, whose name every time I see the name, I'm like, where is this anime? But anyway,
I was trying to like keep myself from saying Akira. I was like, no. Yeah.
Okay, that's why it sounds so familiar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
But anyway, so yeah, I like that. I loved the dinner scene. That was so funny. It was like, Barry Watson, Dad, and Dee sort of, like, fighting for dominance at the table. Then Naomi and her mom are like, so, that's great. Thanks. But they're also, and I do like how, like, the parents kind of back off a bit whenever Dee reminds them, like, well, you had, what was it, like, you had 17 years to tell her, so, like, sorry that I jumped the gun.
Right.
I was like, oh, oh. Anyway, I am also very, very happy that the merry-go-round has, you know, come back around to Nathan this episode, even though, like, okay, like, based on this episode, they really did a nice job of showcasing him being there for her, him understanding what she really wants, and also, like, not pushing her to do something that she's not that interested in. And they do, they have, like, a nice back and forth, a nice chemistry that hints at whatever their past was. And you know, the lead up to the kiss was cute. It was cute that he was like, oh, so have you decided what you want or whatever, right? And she's like, oh yeah, I have, and it's you. And I like that also he wasn't like pushing for it, right? He wasn't asking her to make a choice. There wasn't any situation where she needed to make a choice between these people and then she chose Nathan. It's like she just chose him because she did want to choose him. So that was nice. I like that the stakes are raised with the bounty hunter coming. Even though, like, I also, you know, in the future, you will ask, like, why now? Why here? Yeah. Which I agree with, but I'm glad that we've got something going on. Like, we had, like, there is some real danger happening, and people need to be rescued, because it was about time. Also, I did very much enjoy the escape room, and I love Annabelle, and her boyfriend's name is Jacob. That's her boyfriend's name, right? Yeah.
Yes.
They're really cute, especially, I just love Annabelle and Naomi together, and I'm glad that we are... It seems like we're sort of, like, shifting the focus from Naomi and, like, who she will choose or whatever, because there was never that many compelling arguments to choose anyone. So, yay.
Why did I think that Annabelle's boyfriend's name was Andrew for some reason?
He looks like an Andrew, maybe.
Maybe that's the actor's name.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. So what did not spark joy?
Just the general lack of conflict. Like, Naomi finds out that she hails from another planet, that her parents knew that something was up, even though they say they don't know anything else. But I feel like she wasn't mad enough at them because they kept that secret for so long.
Which is funny because that was the plot about her emotions.
So it's like she's like, I'm fine. Like, and Dee's like, are you fine? It's okay if you're not fine. You can express you not being fine. And I just was waiting for her to blow up at somebody, and it never happened. And I feel like...
I punched this bag, and now I really am fine.
Yeah. I feel like the relationship between her and her parents is nice as it is for them to be supportive and everything. I just feel like you're a teenager. You're going to butt heads with your parents. And I feel like that would... be more engaging to watch than just having everything be a little bit too hunky-dory, especially since, you know, they did keep a massive secret from her and did not tell her, and I still don't necessarily buy that they don't know anything else, but I just wanted there to be more. Like, I wanted Naomi to express negative feelings about them, about anything, really, you know, because there's, like, so much going on with her now, and it's all about finding out more about her history, but I feel like there should also be time for her to talk about these things. She has outlets to do so. She has Annabelle, she has Dee, you know, so her parents don't have to be the enemy number one or anything, but I just want a little bit more push-pull there. I think the class president stuff, I don't know why on TV shows people act like class presidents do all this shit for the school. They really don't. And I don't get why, you know, they would be in charge of, like, what's in the vending machine. They don't have say in that, probably, and never really did. They planned the parties and the proms or whatever. But the whole argument was dumb. And, like, Naomi's speech was fine.
Or, like, it's like, a popularity contest that people want to be class president.
Yeah. I feel like the whole, you know, she clearly didn't want to do it, but... even like her speech, I'm like, this was really good, but also, why is the subplot here?
her speech felt like a concession speech, and then she ended it with, vote for me.
Yeah, And then it turns out she like gave up on it. So I was like, wait, right. What? Hello?
Yeah. And it still feels like there are too many characters that they're trying to balance, and they, like, I don't know who Anthony is as a person. I don't know.
There is no Anthony. That's why you. Oh, just, there is an Anthony. There's no there Andrew.
See, you're
trying
to erase him now.
I'm
like,
trying.
Mortis pops in during the escape room, but again, like, we don't really know that much about her. And it feels like there's so many people, and the central mystery and what's happening with Naomi, that they could have probably taken some of these people out to begin with and not have had any issue with the plot, because there's already a lot of characters, including her parents and Dee and Zimbabwe and Akira. So it's just overwhelming sometimes, and it often feels like people like Anthony or Lourdes, they're just there and they don't actually serve anything to the plot or to Naomi, really, outside of that.
Yeah, they definitely could like stagger some of, they could have staggered some of the love interests, and maybe we like Lourdes in the back half when we think things are going good with her and Nathan, and then Lourdes pops up, or, you know, something like that, something to give it a little bit more of, you know, stagger out the thing so that you have like different little pockets of tension as you like go through the story. The president, school president plot was dumb. you know, over vending snack machines, like fighting over fruit snacks, like really, like that's what you pushes your button to the max. And then the only person that can fight against like food oppression, healthy snacks oppression is Naomi. For why? For like what reason? It just kind of reminded me, it just felt like Esme, the girl was like, you know, she was having like a Michelle Obama moment where she's telling her peers to eat more vegetables. She's like, you can't control my body. you know, and even this plot, as like as it was, I feel like there could have been more stakes for Naomi if the show invested in Esme, because I can't remember if Esme is the same girl that Naomi went up against in the speech contest and for debate and like the pilot. But if it is, and that's like a clear little rivalry that they have going on, but we don't see Esme, or we don't really see a lot of school plot or school conflict for me to really care about the school president plot, which is clearly there just to be a plot. So I feel like, you know, that just kind of, I feel like this is the opposite of Stargirl in the sense that Stargirl is clearly centered on the kids, and Pat is there to support the kids until you see them at school and all that kind of stuff. Whereas Naomi, it feels like the plot is more about the adults, and the kids are just kind of like superfluous outside of Naomi, of course, because she's like the main character. So, it just feels like they, like you said, there's too many characters, and they try to cover all the characters at the same time, so none of the characters get any kind of development, is what it is right now. And like you said, like, Borders only showed up in the escape room plot, so she's supposed to be, if she's supposed to be a love interest, like, we only get to see her in a group setting, and she only comes in, like, randomly, like, once an episode, so we don't really get a lot of time to invest in her, and why she might be a better choice than Nathan, for example. I thought the arrival of the bounty hunter was kind of weird, just because, like, there wasn't a lot of explanation about him until the end. And he also said he was supposed to take her back. And I'm like, take her back where? Because Akira said there was no place to go back to. So I'm confused. Like, is Earth 29 still there and people don't know it? So, I mean, that could be like a, that could be a thing. So I don't know, but I was just confused, like, whoever sent him to get her, why are they sending him there now? Like, I feel like it would have been much easier to steal a baby than to steal like a 17-year-old.
I feel like the disc or
the
whatever,
disc call somebody? Triggered,
like, let them be. Let me rephrase it. The disc let them be aware that other people were in on the planet from Earth 29, because I don't think they knew.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, and we got like a comment from Captain Ashante on Twitter, And they were like, you know, they love this week's episode, but Naomi writers need to be careful about showing a teen trusting adult men like this. Mm. And I was like, you know what? That's, you know, points were made, because like when D did come to pick her up, I was thinking like, this is a little weird. Like, why are you calling D and not your parents? Or like, you got there by yourself, like on the bus, like you didn't give enough change to get back, you know? So yeah, you know, I can kind of agree with that. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, she invited D to dinner is kind of like, and like the tension between the dad and D, it was kind of meet my boyfriend-ish, and dad's like, I don't like him. So I could see, yeah, I could definitely see that. But yeah.
Well, to add to the chorus. Okay, so the montage when her and Nate like kiss, or like she chooses him or whatever, and like the montage was just like three random stares over the course of three episodes. I was like, well, this is what happens when you A, get your ship together in episode 4, and then B, you get their ship together in episode 4 after dividing up ship time between three ships. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that if you're going to have her choose in a very straightforward way in 4 episodes? What was the point? That was so unnecessary. Had me thinking that there was going to be like a whole like commentary on like, you know, relationships now and like how kids can like maybe view romance outside the no. So should have just stuck with one ship. Do those interactions. Lourdes and Anthony can exist, just not in ship form. And then once you have cycled through whatever you want to do with Nathan, then you could start up the next ship if you're going to do it that way. So whatever. I don't know. I thought that was a very strange. But anyway, aside from that, I feel like the school president, not only was the school president plot in and of itself silly, because like I actually agree with a girl who wants the healthy food in the vending machines. Like, sure, because sometimes you have to save people from themselves, okay? If there's bad food in the vending machine, I'm gonna eat the bad food. If there's good food, I don't have a choice. I'll eat the good food. So thank you, other girl whose name I can't remember, doing the Esme. Lord's work. Esme, thank you. Should be Renesme. That would have been more hilarious. That would have been real commentary. But anyway, what was I gonna say? It's like, outside of just the fact that I thought that was like a little silly, the fact that everyone is immediately like, oh my god, Naomi should run. Naomi is the best. There was like absolutely no resistance whatsoever to the concept of Naomi just being the school president. The only problem is like Naomi herself being like, you know what? Maybe I'm too good for that. Maybe I have other things to do. Alien things. So that just like goes back to like what we're saying, like she should have more conflict with her parents, more conflict with, you know, like if you're potentially leading on three different people at the same time, not that she is, but like whatever, you know, like that could even be a real thing. But instead there's a very minimal conflict. Even Zimbardo's like, take it. Oh, you know what?
That was, you asked so nicely. Because she was like, I'm not leaving here until you give it to me. And he gave it to her. She's like, why would you do this?
To make you leave. But yeah. So I feel like it's like breezing through things right now. Even though there are hints of what's going to be higher stakes, I would not mind some of those higher stakes emerging, if not in big budget action sequences, at least in terms of interpersonal dynamics. Although I am very happy to see cute fun times. Just a little bit of not cute fun times would be good, whether it was with the parents or whether it was with, you know, I don't know, one of the love interests, or even if, you know what, maybe Jacob and Annabelle should have a fight. I don't know. Anyone can fight. That was fine.
I want one of those kids to be like an alien.
There you go.
Like Loki. They've been an alien the whole time.
God, what if they're one of like the bounty hunter people? Anthony. Anthony Annabelle. Is a spy for the other side. Not Annabelle!
That's the real conflict. No one cares about Anthony.
That would be the real conflict. But then, you know, they would resolve it in, like, an episode. You'd be like, no, but I love you, Naomi. You convinced me that the bounty hunter ways are bad. And your ways are beautiful. All right. So, did we get feedback for Naomi?
We did. Suara says, hello, ladies. Naomi this week was really good. I feel like he says Naomi this week is really good every week.
He loves it. He loves it.
The show. The tension with their parents now, even knowing that they're on her side, is really interesting and well done, including their tension with Dee. They all want the best for Naomi, but are very uncertain on how to go about it. We see it weighing on Naomi herself as she wants to be more proactive, but runs into these emotional roadblocks with her parents. Really hope Greg just leaves the military altogether during the course of the show, but of course we'll see. Oh, that was the other thing that I thought I didn't like about Greg in the dinner thing, because it felt like he was trying to grill Dee to find out like his immigration status or something. Like, are you here illegally? Can I turn you in? You know, that kind of thing. So that bothered me. Continuing, he says the stakes seem to be increasing rapidly with the bounty hunters for Naomi, bringing more stress on her and her friends. That's making the show more gripping, and I hope this energy continues in the rest of the season. Also, I knew she came from an alternate Earth. It'll be very intriguing to see how they handle any sort of multiverse, and I hope they're able to do the comic storyline justice. I also, I guess Naomi chose already? LOL. But good for Nathan, who, other than Lourdes, is the best choice. We'll see where it goes from here, of course. Overall, great momentum for the show.
Thank you, Sora. Do we have predictions?
I mean, it's prediction based off of nothing, but I want one of the kids to be an alien.
I love that prediction. You know, I'm invested now. I support it. Because that would introduce, that's like the conflict that we want.
Yeah. And I think that Akira thinks Earth 29 is gone, but it's not. And that's why Zimbabwe wants something.
Or maybe Zimbabwe thinks that there's still an Earth 29. She's like, no, there's not. And the bounty hunter is like, yes, there is.
Ooh, Omo. I see it. I see
but
it.
Those are all adult plots. So are you trying to like bring the kids in some way? Lourdes can be.
And I Lourdes, feel like it's.
Sorry, Lourdes can be the alien.
Lourdes can be the alien. That. Yeah.
That would give her a lot to do.
Would.
That would. That's true. I support
it. I was going to say, I'm already like sort of.
And if they're both from Earth 29, like that gives her Naomi's like soulmateism. So you know,
that's
watch out,
true.
Nathan.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
I forgot her tragic backstory with her family.
She dropped out because I think her mom got sick, so she was helping her mom. Is that what it was?
Oh, okay. I don't remember, but I'm gonna spin it.
Maybe her mom got sick with like an alien disease.
Maybe that's the reason. Like maybe her mom is like connected to like the reason Dee went back.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a tragic backstory. We are spinning stories. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting because, like, I think in the comics, if I'm remembering correctly, Greg and Dee knew each other because Greg was also an alien.
Would
have been amazing. Yeah.
Greg was
like,
an alien?
I saw that he, like, in the comics, Greg and Dee are the ones that find Naomi and not Greg and Mama McDuffie.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
exactly. And because, like, he came to Earth, I think they were combating each other, and then, like, he came to Earth, he fell in love with the mom, and they weren't able to have kids. Because I think that's why I was waiting for the montage, because their love story happened so easily, and I think it would have been more interesting, or maybe a little bit more heartfelt, like, if they had been maybe struggling to have kids, and then Naomi just pops up and just, like, she's ours, you know, and that would... I don't know. That would give it a little bit more oomph because I feel like everything is just happening. And that's it. It would have made Greg a more interesting character if he happened to be an alien too.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
So now we move to side B, Rules of War and Compassionate Non-Confinement. Starting with Legends of Tomorrow, episode Rage Against the Machines. With the help of Ambar Thawne, the Legends break a fixed point, creating an aberration, ending World War I before it begins, attracting the evil Waywriter. The Legends are soon shocked at who has been hunting them, and Sarah tries to negotiate with evil alien robot versions of themselves, which does not go as planned. Seemingly out of options, Gwyn, who this whole time I've been calling Gwyn, and I feel like no one has stopped me.
I call him Gwyn. They call him Gwyn.
They were calling him Gwyn in this episode, weren't they? Did I just make that up?
You did. I feel like you made it up.
Did I have like a fever dream?
I think I would remember Gwyn.
Okay, fine. Well, then I guess it's just Gwyn. I could have sworn they called him Gwyn, and I was like, wait, what? Have I been calling him Gwyn the whole time? Anyway, rises to the occasion by using his military expertise and hatches a stealth plan. Meanwhile, Gary helps Astra realize she has been sidelining Gideon from the mission out of Mama Bear feelings. Directed by Jess McCallan. Yay, Jess! Which is why she conveniently got shot early in the episode and then only appeared to have bathroom problems. And written by Mark Bruner and Mercedes Valle. What sparked joy?
I think, like, when I saw that it was Jess that directed the episode, I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense that she was shot and hardly in the episode. This episode, I think, was, like, Gwen's coming into his true legendness, you know, becoming a true legend and not letting Sarah go out to meet the Robos alone. I liked his little, he's very, you know, unexpected in the sense that he is very straight-laced and, you know, he's a very religious guy. He's very straight-laced about, you know, doing it military, pro-military, stay for your country, doing things by the book. So he's definitely like a different energy compared to what the legends are used to. But I think he was exactly what they needed. And because the Robo Legends are pretty, you know, they run on a tight ship around Gideon. It's all very like, very strictly controlled. So Gwen having that military experience and being able to plan, it took a lot of pressure off of Sarah as well to have to come up with things and save everybody. And he had a really good master plan about how to get them off the ship and how to distract them and incorporating in the spy with Behrad taking over his robo counterpart and getting onto the ship so they could steal the ship back. So I thought that was all really, really good. And he got really into it because I feel like he's been kind of a little bit of an unwilling participant because they pretty much like kidnapped him and just stole his time machine to hop around places. So this was his first time really getting into the action and you know, being really proactive this episode. So I like that a lot. I really like that Astra was worried about Gideon and their mother-daughter relationship. I was really scared when because Evil Behrad was just like so creepy and very threatening. And so when he followed Ava's blood back to the little time bar, I was really, really concerned about how they were going to survive. So when Astra like blasted him with magic, that was, you know, a yes kind of moment. And I hope she's not getting any kind of, like, I don't really go into fandom, but I would hope that people would see that Astra's actions towards Gideon throughout the episode were out of being scared for her and being like protective, because it very much read, I'm your mother and you'll do what I say. So that's like the vibe that they kind of gave off from the beginning. So hopefully she's not getting any kind of thanks for that. And even if people were like, why are you doing this? By the end, you know, when Gideon, when Gary was like, you know, she's like your daughter and that kind of clicked. And we get to see Astra, her emotions about it and the fact that she did literally create Gideon's human form. And I like the ending when she found a way to apologize to Gideon by getting Gideon involved. And that wound up saving Sarah, Nate, and Gwen, and I think Spooner. So all of that was really good. And I like, you know, Gideon hugging Astra and actually calling her mom. So that just like solidifying that whole relationship was really, really cute. Zari fighting Zari. When they had like the fight, they were both dressed alike and Astra and Gary couldn't tell them apart. But the thing with Zari and Zari is that neither of them could fight. So it's just like a hilarious slap fight between Zaris. I feel like all they had to do was ask, you know, a fashion question. And real Zari would have immediately like responded.
Right. But they would have to know the fashion answer.
Well, yeah, like just our fashion response, like just be like, oh, you look really nice in those cargo pants. And then that would have like set Zari off, the real Zari. So I feel like they could have done it. But it was still funny. Behrad and Astra kissing. Yes. I felt like that was such an intense moment when they're trying to like land the ship. And they were like doing it together. So I felt like if there was not a release in a kiss in that moment, I would just have been mad. So I was really happy that they kissed. Great movement for them. What else? I thought Nate tricking his robo self into wearing the bracelet was really smart. And I also like that Robo Nate turned into Arnold Schwarzenegger whenever he got hit in the face, and calling himself the Exterminator. So that was funny. It was overall, I think, a pretty enjoyable episode. It ended very horrifically, but I think that, you know, put some stakes in. And there was like a lot of tension for Sarah of, you know, Thawne being dead and her potentially being stuck in the past, and how is she going to solve that, and, you know, her willing to sacrifice herself, and then Nate being able to find a way to save her in the end, like she always saves them. So all that stuff was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. It was a pretty solid episode. I think that it made a lot of, it had a lot of forward movement with regards to plot, and finally one-upping the Robo Legends, and Evil Gideon as well. Like, they shut her down. So that was great. I love that Zari got to do that, because she, you know, previously we had, like, Hacker Zari, and she was able to, like, do all of these things, and now it's like Zari's like, I don't know what's going on, so she just pulls the plug, and it's like, oh, that was easy. And I also really loved the fight between her and Robo Zari, because that was just hilarious, slapping against each other and having the other two watch. And I also love that Gwyn has become kind of like part of the ship, part of the crew type person, who is willing to, like, he's seeing all the different sides to everybody, and he's been with them long enough to kind of get a different perspective on things. And the fact that he put in all the effort to try to ensure that Sarah was safe and the whole team was safe, and that they could actually win back the Wave Rider, was some tremendous character development for him. Especially, like, it feels like he's breaking out of his shell in a lot of ways, whereas, like, before, the Gwyn we met was very scared, he was very jittery, and now he was very much in charge of the situation, and it was a nice change to see, and also just speaks of
it all felt the like he loosened up had. A little bit. He gained a lot of confidence and he loosened up a lot.
Yeah, and that was really nice. And of course, Behrad and Astra kissing, because I was worried that they were just gonna crash and burn, but that moment was just really, really intense.
Like the ship, or like, no, literally, the ship. Or okay.
Not them as like a the physical ship. So I love that for them. I think that, you know, Behrad, I think two episodes ago, was like, you know, we'll take it slow or whatever. And I think they have been going at a nice pace where nothing is really feeling like they're doing anything over the top or rushing things or anything like that. So this kiss felt earned after, you know, a few episodes.
Almost dying. They built up.
Mm-hmm. And Robo Nate is one of my favorites because he's just so dumb. Like, he's just so dumb. So seeing him, like, especially since, like, real Nate tricked him into thinking that he posed it as a challenger. He's like, I bet I could protect the timeline, you know, from anything. He's like, what are you talking about? And then getting, you know, the watch slapped on him and then getting sucked into the vortex was amazing. And even, like, how they took out Robo Legends as well. I like that part too, especially since, like, it was Astra and Gideon working together on that, and, like, Gideon pretending to be evil Gideon for that to work. And I do especially like the Astra and Gideon part, because at first, like, I was like, why is she yelling at her? And I'm like, I see what's going on here.
You see it.
Yeah. And so it was a really great moment, because from the beginning, you're right, like, they've had that relationship, and Astra's been very protective of Gideon for several episodes now, and she did, like, birth her into existence in a lot of ways. So it was just, like, a nice way to also develop their relationship and make Gideon realize too that, you know, Astra was just trying to protect her, even though she proved herself very capable of doing things on her own. And I like that Astra told Gideon that she was also proud of her, because I think that they've come such a long way, and it also gives Astra a relationship that, like, outside of Spooner specifically, like, she's second closest to Gideon at this point, and it was a nice evolution of their relationship. Robo Gary, or Spooner tricking Robo Gary into
Oh, I forgot that. That was so great. She was so quick on her feet.
She was. And then when Robo Spooner did show up, and she's like, "I'm the real Spooner." He's like, "What are you talking about?" He just like eats her up. Hilarious. I think that they really mined the whole Robo Legends part of it really well. So it's kind of sad to see them go, but they had to come to an end. And I really dug like the way that they wrapped up that element of the story.
I agree with everything that has been said, but I have to say, I really, really, really loved the Astra and Gideon storyline, and I was like not expecting it to go that route. Like when they were like, "It's because you're like her mom," and I was like, "Wait, oh my god!" And I even liked that, like, even Gideon didn't seem to like Gideon like knew that that was the situation, which is like, well, like basically I'm grounded. It's like I can't go out and help, because it could have been like much more of a misunderstanding, I guess, with Gideon feeling like all like, "Oh, I'm not wanted" or whatever. But instead, it was more just like as soon as Astra's like, "I'm proud of you," Gideon's like, "I love you, mom," or whatever.
But even when she was yelling at her, she was like, "You know, my mom said I can't go outside."
Yeah, exactly. It was very clearly just like, okay, well, I'm not allowed to go, so I have to stay here. And that was really cute. I enjoyed that. Also, good job directing Jess McCallum. We had to sacrifice, you know, Astra's well-being for the better part of an hour, but you did a good job. I loved all like the different fight sequences and the ways that the actors and I assume directing came into this as well, you know, differentiated between themselves, their robot selves, and then themselves as their robot selves, and then their robot selves not knowing the difference between their real self and the robot self, but also not coming across as just like entirely stupid, right? Because we've already had an episode where obviously they're like, you know, brainwashed or CPU controlled or whatever, to whatever degree, but they also have been programmed to be pretty lethal, so they can't just be easily taken out. So they had to strike the balance between like the comedy of it all and then also like the difficulty of this mission, which I thought they did a pretty good job balancing. I agree that Gwyn became just like the badass that he was meant to be, that we didn't know he could be. And like this whole, like the moment of him having like those flashbacks to the Great War, also juxtaposed with like the new family he's found and the legends, was really, really nice. And his plan was badass. Good job, Gwyn. Welcome to the team for real this time. I will resent you less for not being John Constantine now. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. I especially loved, it's like, I loved Spooner impersonating Robo Spooner, pretending that she's impersonating Spooner, right? Yes. And then that whole sequence leading to Gary eating Spooner and exploding himself. She literally told her that that was going to happen, and he still ate Robo Spooner and then he exploded. So, mistakes we knew we were making. But sometimes the meal is just too good. It's like me when I see the calories, but then I look at it and I'm like, I'm still gonna eat it. What do you want me to do? I'm gonna eat it. So, the fight was so funny with Zari versus herself, especially with Astra and the fact that they, first off, the fact that they like followed up on it, like when Gary came to talk to Astra about how she was behaving, and Astra's like, "Why aren't you guarding the door?" Right? And then he wasn't, and that's how the Zaris ended up fighting each other. And then they're just standing there like, "Which Zari are we gonna protect?" When Astra was like, "I guess just eat both of them and you'll spit one out." Oh, everything was excellent about that. Also, I love the Zari's line, "My agent warned me about playing villains." When she was like going in to play the other version of herself. And, you know, she really got into that character. She did her research. She did that homework. She was just method acting. It was beautiful.
They all turn into like surfer bros a little bit when they're like their evil selves. He's like, "Yeah, dude."
Yes. also loved how. Just that, like, the literal toilet humor, but it still worked. Like, he's like, "Okay, well, I'm going to make them have to go to the bathroom, and then the bathroom is going to be the doorway to our Hell Dimension mansion." All of that, excellent. Just had a good time with this episode. Thank you for coming. What did not spark joy?
Gideon getting stabbed. Like, what the fuck? And I didn't realize, like, which one it was. I guess it was Robo Astra who came back in through the hell door is what it was, which mm-hmm. Which makes it even worse that your evil Robo mom is the one that stabbed you. But just, you know, we had such a nice moment with Gideon and Astra and, you know, like, I love you, mom, and all this kind of stuff. And it was just really sweet. And she was so happy because now she got to participate. So when she went back to the house and then wind up being stabbed, and like, it was just like, hurt my heart. So I didn't like that. That sparked no joy whatsoever. and then also, I don't really blame Behrad for being weirded out by his robo-double because, like, robo-Behrad was just, like, disturbing. Spooner, too. Robo-Spooner and robo-Behrad were, like, the most disturbing robo-visuals. they were, like, kill counts and all that kind of stuff. They just really, like, creeped me out a lot. They made me super uncomfortable. So I was very glad to see them go. Just because I feel like, you know, on the level of depravity, there would have been no wiggle room to even try to attempt to negotiate with them the way Sarah was trying to, like, negotiate with Nate. It just would not have, like, even gotten that far. And when the other thing that kind of bothered me, and I guess it goes back to, like, the depravity of the Robo Legends and how, like, yes, they're funny in the sense that they are just so kind of, like, ridiculous. But then also when you kind of think about all the time travelers came to, I don't know how they knew about the Robo Legends or if they told or whatever, but they all just got, like, murdered, just, like, unceremoniously shot down. And, you know, see the bartender get a bullet to the head and all that kind of stuff. Not great. No joy there at all. So, oh, and Thon, like, you're just dead now. Like, you go out on Legends, Thon, and he's like, it's not even like he was trying to be underhanded or whatever. He was just being, like, a good guy, and then that's the end of his story. And it feels very weird that they would be allowed to kill him and not have anything resolved with him on the Flash. So that was, like, a no bueno.
Yes, I completely agree with that. I was like, because he was killed so early on in the episode 2, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, is that it? Is this really how he's gonna go out? Like, this big diabolical villain is just suddenly redeemed, and now he's going to be stabbed by Robo Sarah. It didn't sit right with me. I don't think they needed to bring him back at all if they were gonna have him go out in this way, because it doesn't feel like his character really at all here, you know? And so it's like they could have had anybody be the time protector of the fixed point, especially since Thon didn't even have his powers here. So he didn't need to be a speedster to be in that situation. So it just felt like something that didn't need to happen. And I hate it. So justice for Matt Letcher being Thon. Hopefully it'll never happen on The Flash again. But, you know, I just don't think that this was a great way for him to go out at all. Especially since, like, him being here on Legends in this particular storyline doesn't even make sense for Thon on Armageddon. After he's, like, fucking with the timeline, changing the timeline, killing Barry, whatever.
Right. So, which, that's what I'm saying. Like, you weren't even lying. Like, you were telling the truth that you wanted to
change
the timeline. Like, what the hell?
You're not being a manipulator. So it doesn't make sense. So I did not like it at all. And what else? I feel like I did like most other things in this episode. But that was my biggest pet peeve, and also Gideon being stabbed, because I was not, like, I was so shocked that it happened, because, you know, it feels like the episode was ending on a good note and they were all going to be in it together for what happens next, and then this happens. So I'm very worried about her, because she's only been on for, like, one season, and I don't want her to die. So that's all.
She better not die. I will be furious. Just can't do it. Can't have it. I think it was, like, really well placed, and that it was right after that beautiful moment with Astra. And then it's Astra. Like, it's Robo-Astra who stabs her. And I was like, mother effer. But I hate it. And I better... She better be okay. I obviously agree that Thawne randomly dying on Legends. A, on Legends instead of Flash. Like, why? And then B, after, like, being subdued by, as we already said, the DC's answer to the Time Variance Authority, and just, like, being, like, a chill dude, and then it's, like, Robo-Sarah who stabs him, and then, like, Sarah feels all bad about it. And I was like, you don't even need to feel that bad, Sarah. It wasn't, you didn't do it, and he's the worst! Why is this happening? So, everything about that was just, like, really weird. I didn't like it. Also, I feel like Robo-Sarah, like, you know, given that we had a whole episode where she's, like, going against her programming and kind of, like, figuring out what's going on, I would have liked to see, like, a little bit of, like, Sarah being, Robo-Sarah being, I don't know, showing a hint of rebelliousness than before, but I guess there was not time for it. So in the end, it was just, like, Robo-Sarah didn't do all that much, and I was like, oh, okay, that was somewhat disappointing. And yes, Fixed Point patrons getting killed off with no preamble was very depressing. And I feel bad for them. And I don't like the Robo-Legends. But I guess that's what made it fun to watch them just die in numerous ways. Speaking of, I'm so glad that Gwen stopped the cycle of watch Sarah die in numerous ways after, like, one. Because I was like, I really don't want to do this again. Let's please, please. So thank you, Gwen. feedback?
You know, Flores, he says, Legends was so good, but no, Gideon! Oh, that was so crushing. Right after she gets a hug from real Astra Robo, Astra stabs her. Ugh. But I'm certain she'll be okay in one form or another. I really hope she's able to remain human. I can't wait for next week. The outsmarting of the Robo Legends was fantastic and hilarious, especially with the laxatives. I didn't think Thawne would be killed that fast or that they'd solve the issue by trapping Robo Nate in there, but I don't mind it much. Sarah was so ready to make the big sacrifice. Great episode for her overall, by the way. But they're legends, and they always find a way. It seemed like a simple victory over the seasoned villains, but I doubt that Evil Gideon is done quite yet. Also, yay, he's calling it Bestra. How do we feel about this? Bearheart and Estra.
He's calling it Bestra. They are the best, so I support
it. It's true.
Okay. He's like, yay, Bestra kiss. It was such a great moment for it, and I'm so glad they're sealing the deal. Jess McGowan did a great job directing, and I can't wait to see what happens from here.
Thank you, Swara. do we have predictions? Speaking of what happens from here.
I don't know. Because, like, Gideon, it's like Evil Gideon. They thought they killed Evil Gideon, and now she's back. And now I'm just kind of like, then you just kill her again. I don't know.
Yes.
This is news that I forgot to include. Dawn Faison is coming in to Legends season 7 finale. Oh, yes, I guess. Right.
That is actual news.
Yes, I think they call him like a fame hungry type of character.
Wasn't it a fame hungry time traveler, aka Blue Beetle?
Possibly.
Blue Beetle. Why did I say that? You know, Booster
Gold.
Booster Gold. Thank you.
Yeah, I think they mentioned something about gold and him being like clout chasing. So
yes, Booster Gold.
Love that for him. I love him, so I'm glad he's gonna be on this show. I feel like
they say, well, we can't use you on Powerpuff Girls, we're gonna put you in something.
That's
so,
right.
Aww. So how do we Powerpuff think that Girls. he comes into the end of the season? Like, how does he fit in?
I don't know. There's two episodes left, right? Like, I don't know. So, I mean, I'm hoping to find out, but I got nothing.
All right. Well, I tried.
I mean, he's definitely coming in, and it's going to be exciting. But I don't know what it's going to be aside from, like, the tease for next season, probably. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm. All right. So, with that in mind, another show coming to the conclusion of its season shortly, sort of, is Batwoman with Broken Toys. Just when it seems things can't get worse, Batwoman's identity is once again at risk of being exposed, and some of Gotham's most villainous unite under Marcus's rule. Sophie joins Luke on a hacking mission, Ryan and Jada are held hostage by Zaz, and Alice gets into Mary's head while attempting to fix the Joker buzzer with the help of Carla Espinoza. Speaking of Donald Faison. Directed by Cameron Johnson and written by Chad Fiveash, James Sotero, and Natalie Abrams. Three people came together to write that wild war scene for us. Exactly. What sparked joy?
Well, that sparked joy. That sparked a lot of joy. I was not expecting for them to go there. I just thought, I was like, yes, Ryan's the one who initiated the kiss. And then they went into the whole sex thing. I was like, okay, I am on board for this too, I guess. You know, we're going. I really liked even like the way that it was filmed, that it went on for so long. Appreciated that too. I think that the two have so much chemistry, and it really was a nice way to wrap up what they've been going through over the last few episodes, because Ryan's been stuck in her head. She's got too much going on to try to get out of it and avoiding Sophie. And Sophie's kind of been stuck wondering what the hell was it her, what she did wrong. And also admitting to like liking Ryan for a long time, which I really loved that conversation with her and Luke. So to have them finally be headed towards being in an actual relationship with Ryan making the move, like the ball was in her court. And she finally decided, you know, thanks to her talk with Jada, that she should let her walls down, let people in, and not kind of put Sophie to the side. Nobody put Sophie in the corner. And she did not do that. So I really appreciated that whole thing. And especially since, like, it also developed Ryan and Jada's relationship, because we finally understand at this point, after a long time, why Jada gave up Ryan. And also that she was kind of like too scared to let her back in. And I really, at first I was like, the explanation was like, okay, we finally have it. But then I really liked that Ryan wasn't going to let that go. And, you know, the whole $2 million, you could have spared me that and actually like checked up on me to see that I was okay. So I really liked that she didn't just take her excuse and that she had something else to say, which was really brave of her. And the fact that Jada now knows that she is Batwoman, and she didn't have to be told or anything. She was just able to see how Ryan was fighting. And also like the idea of giving a child everything, but then turning out to be someone you are not necessarily proud of, versus not giving them anything, even though she should have given her something, but like she still turned out okay in the end. And that was interesting for Jada too, because she's like, is it me? Like, why is this happening? But I really liked how that has sort of come full circle in their little relationship, and including Marcus in all of that, which Marcus, I mean, Nick Cregan has been doing a phenomenal job playing him. I think there's something so sinister about like his eyes whenever he talks. I'm so creeped out. I'm like, oh my God.
Especially like bugs him out.
Yes, exactly. So it's really creepy. So I think he's doing a tremendous job, and it's like he's doing all of these things, but I feel like his plans in general are very like one step at a time. I'm going to do this and this and this. I'm going to threaten you, but nothing. It's not like one big episode of one big showdown. It's like a slow burn. And I kind of like that, because we're not getting everything all at once. And I really like the fact that Alice and Mary went to see Kiki, and she was like the Joker's toy maker, basically. And even though I was rooting for her at first, and I was like, oh, you know, this is a great character. And then she turns on them in the end. But I do still think that her advice was really good, in that like you have to work every day.
She just didn't want to take it.
Yeah, she just didn't want to take it, you know? So she was very aware, but she just didn't want to. But it still made Mary think about like what it is that she did, and like no matter what, she can't take back her actions, but at the same time she can still work towards making amends in her own way. And I really like that, because it says that obviously she's going to try. And it also, like, at the same time spoke to Alice, because she needed to hear that too, even though she came to a completely different conclusion, because she doesn't want to do the hard work. But I really like that for both of them, considering their journey this season, they needed to hear that piece of advice. And I think the way that they bonded helped, like, Alice come to that realization without being pushed to that realization, and also helped Mary not feel guilty, but, like, helped relieve some of the burden that she's been carrying for the last couple of episodes. So all of that was really great. And we got a lot of just great character dynamics in this episode, and it was all fabulous.
It's really interesting, like, the whole conversation between Mary and Alice in the car when Mary's like, you know, what do you do when you have these feelings? Like, how do you get over it? And Alice's, like, advice was just to, like, take those feelings and then bury them and then bury that, like, deep down and pack it inside. And, you know, the way that she was talking about how, you know, make up excuses saying you think that they deserve it. It obviously, the intent was this is what Alice does, but I also feel like Alice kills people way too easily to have that mind process that she was telling Mary about, you know, let's ignore the fact that they're not a bad person and, you know, let's make up stuff. So, but yeah, I agree. Like, I liked their interactions with Kiki, and I thought that Kiki did a really good job. She had me in the first half, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I thought, I was like, yes, you see, Alice, this is how you reform a criminal. But then it turned out that she was not reformed. But, you know, and I also like that the advice, like, her therapist that told her all this stuff was Harley. So that was a nice little, like, Easter egg name drop. And, you know, just because he didn't want to take it does not mean it's not good advice. So I think I agree with you that from where Alice, where we think Alice will potentially go by the end of the season and what Mary's going through, it was good plot for them to kind of both work through that in their own ways. I also thought, you know, it hurt Alice a little bit when Mary's like, I'm not a sociopath. And Alice's like, oh, well, okay then. Because she clearly is. So that plot was good. I really liked another trio that I liked, including a bad guy, was Ryan, Jada, and Victor Zsasz. Because it was just like, it was nice to see Victor Zsasz again, because I remember the first time that we saw him, like, back last season, like, one of the first people Ryan went up against as Batwoman. They had, like, a really good kind of, like, banter back and forth. And the fact that Victor knows Ryan as Ryan, and he's coming to kill Jada, and he's like, oh, hey, Ryan.
It was like a good, like, old friend.
Yeah, it's like a little friend reunion while I'm killing this person. Nice to see you. You know, that kind of stuff. And then when he found out that they were mother and daughter and they had been, like, separate, he's like, wait, I thought your mom was dead. And then your other mom was dead before that. And she's like, no. The dead one that I thought was dead in the beginning, she's actually not dead. He's like, oh, okay, but she's going to be dead again soon. So it's like this whole... He was so, like, moved by Ryan and Jada discussing their relationships. So he's watching his own, like, little live action telenovela. So that was great. And then you add on top of that the suspense of will Batwoman show up or not, when the whole time Batwoman is in the room all along, was just really, really good. And then also, like, when time is up and obviously, like, Ryan has to, like, fight Victor, because she's not going to let him kill Jada, and Jada realizing during that fight that Ryan is Batwoman. And I kind of feel like a lot of things had been going through her head about, you know, how she treated Batwoman last time they were interacting together. So that was really interesting to see her come to that realization that Ryan is Batwoman, and kind of, like, just, you know, she knows that Ryan has done so well for herself, even though Jada wasn't in her life. But then on top of that, she's also Batwoman. So, yeah, adds even more weight to her guilt, I would say, of giving Ryan up and Ryan having the life that she had. And I think that also adds, like, that layer to the conversation that you're talking about, where, you know, Jada tries to give, like, a believable, plausible excuse of, you know, why she had to do it. And I agree with you. I like that Ryan pushed back and just, you know, didn't, you don't get to, like, rest on, like, oh, the doctor must have been a bad doctor and kept the $2 million. I had no idea. You know, you could have done something if you did care about me to that extent. Even after you gave me $2 million, I still would have been looking up to see, like, how are they doing with that $2 million? You know, are they taking care of my child and all that kind of stuff? So I agree with Ryan pushing back on that narrative and kind of really pressing Jada on that, not letting it slide so easily. This is kind of like a no joy, but like, it's a joy that Jada told the story, but it's also no joy that she stopped short of telling us, like, who the baby daddy is.
Yeah, right. We want to know, Jada.
Right. So we have like almost a complete story, but not quite. But yeah, I liked that whole conversation that they had and kind of finally coming to some sort of like resolve and a new happy place with them. I also loved all Wildmore throughout, like Sophie trying to like press Ryan on why she keeps avoiding her. I liked that their whole relationship is like built off of like bickering and bantering. I feel like, I don't know if it's Megan coming more into her character or a combination of that and the writers actually coming into how they feel about Sophie and letting Sophie do more. I feel like we're seeing a lot more of Sophie and her relationship with Ryan than we had previously when she was still with Kate. Because I feel like Sophie has a lot of like bite to her, and we get to see that a lot more in her, especially like when Ryan's trying to like pull away and Sophie's trying to like fight for not even just the relationship, but just like her spot within the team. And the fact that like she was called a side piece, she was called a sidekick, she was called, you know, like a damsel, and she's like, I am none of these things. And she made sure to like voice that. So I like that she really had a voice. I love that she was like venting to Luke. Luke has like two sisters now that just vent to him all the time about the other one. And he's just like, I didn't ask. So it's really hilarious.
He's like, I just don't even know what's happening.
So I'm just here, just, you know. But I like that stuff. Like, Sophie would not let it go the entire episode, how annoyed she was. And I like that she was, like, venting to Luke about Ryan and reminding, like, everyone that she is a badass. And she was here first. Thank you very much. So I loved all, of, like, you know, her just kind of, like, standing her ground the whole episode. To the point where, like, when Ryan does apologize, thanks to Jada being like, you know, don't be like me. Let down your walls. Let people in, kind of thing. And Ryan calls her to the bar. She, like, she knows to make sure to have some alcohol ready because she knows Sophie's coming in hot. So she's like, here, have a drink, you know, calm down. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to let you in. So that was great. And the fact that it led to them having their first time together. And it's so, you know, Cam's first time directing, Wildmore's first time. So it was all really great experience. And I think he probably made it feel very comfortable for Javicia and Megan. And it was just like a really nice, beautiful like scene and the way that they did it. Even like in the middle, like there was like a tweet that said, we found Batwoman's kryptonite, it's belts. Because she couldn't get Sophie's belt off. That was really funny. I also like, I think Natalie said that it was Cam's idea for the code to the Joker's workshop to be 424242, which is ha ha ha. So I like that.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, I like that little detail that was put in there. I liked Kiki Roulette. I thought she was very entertaining.
Yes.
Yeah.
Judy Reyes is always like a fantastic actress, so I always appreciate when she just pops up. I'm like, oh, there you are.
Kiki Roulette was a lot of fun. I loved Judy Reyes' performance, and I also was taken in by the lies. I believed it wholeheartedly as well. And that, like the fact that she had like the similar laugh to Joker when the reveal happened was great too. I also loved how Alice was kind of taken in too, and that like at first she was suspicious, and rightfully so, it turned out she was right. But then when she started hearing like the like steps and the ways to rehabilitate, suddenly she was like, wait a second, can I do that? Partially motivated, I suppose, by her conversation with Mary, where Mary called her a sociopath. And Alice was like, oh, that makes me sad. I don't want to be a sociopath. And just the whole through line of that storyline. I really like how how Mary and Alice work together and how, like, even though, like, it does feel like Alice genuinely cares for her, it's still not, like, necessarily what's best for Mary. And then we end on that note of, like, well, you should get the Joker buzzer for me and not for Marcus, which is an excellent dilemma, full of delicious tension, because just like I'm sure Ryan would like to save her brother, why wouldn't Mary want to save her sister? Oh, So I enjoy that as a narrative problem set before us. Also, great job, cameras, directing. Yay. I loved everything with A Wild Moor as well. Love that Ryan finally came clean about her feelings and her worries to Sophie. And Sophie was like, you know what? I'm not even going to push you. Like, okay, it's fine. I understand. I just wanted you to be honest. Now you have been. And then Ryan's like, oh, hey, I didn't say that. Oops. So that was fun. And I was not expecting them to go as far as they did, like in terms of what they showed and how they did it, but it was shot very well. Very nice. Glad COVID did not stand in their way.
I saw, like, Natalie Abrams posted a picture that her wife took of her while she was watching Twitter while we were watching Baltimore. She just has kind of this, like, you know, Mr. Burns kind of, like, evil, like, laugh or whatever. But she was just, like, extremely entertained that we were entertained.
Yes, exactly. And we were most certainly entertained. So thank you, everyone. I also felt like the whole way they handled, like, Mary being in her feels about the things she'd done, and then Ryan and Luke kind of, like, tiptoeing around her, trying to make her feel better, but also, like, not really sure what to say, made sense. Even though it was, like, ironically, like, well, this is how you kind of got here in the first place. So, like, now you're, like, consciously trying to, like, you know, take her into consideration, but you're not necessarily doing the best way, but it's, like, yeah. Believable. So, like, I like it because it's believable. All right. Love Zaz. So glad to see him, even though that sounds weird. But the whole love that the whole hospital situation with Ryan and Jada led to them having a real conversation, Jada telling 90% of her story. And Ryan, like you said, calling her out on how, like, okay, well, that's not enough. Like, yes, I love that you did not want to just, like, give me up and you thought that you were doing something for me, but you should have checked on me. Like, if you really cared, you would have done that. And that Jada, like, took that and really, like, accepted that. Like, you know what? You're right. I did fuck up for, like, however many years we've been alive. But maybe we can unfuck up in the future. Also love how Marcus just, like, actually looks crazy. Like, laugh, the purple hair, and then he's talking about sanity. Like, he's giving this speech about, like, how Batwoman is the insane woman. Insane one. And then Sophie's like, how is no one noticing that he looks so insane right now?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, come on, guys, please. So, yeah.
I wonder if this, because I think that in the, I forget who said it, but there was, like, little teases to other, you know, like, Batman kind of teases. And I remember, like, recently on, I don't know, it was, like, TNT or something, they had the Michael Keaton Batman movies on with Jack Nicholson Joker. And I feel like there was a similar scene of him ranting in front of, like, a bank step or something like that to what Marcus was doing this episode. So I was wondering if that was, like, a direct kind of callback or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. It's a good question. Many thoughts. So what did not spark joy?
An excellent question. I guess, like, the whole joy buzzer thing of it all, like, one buzzer is supposed to just take you back to you being you, which I get, but I just don't know if I like that Alice came to that conclusion. Like, that's how she's going to try to be not Alice. Like, I was happy that she came to the conclusion that she no longer wants to be Alice. And I was like, yes, this is so much progress. And then she's like, but I'm going to do it this way. So I did not like that for her, because I feel like sometimes, even still, that it doesn't always feel like the writers, like, they obviously want to keep her around, and it still feels like sometimes they don't know how to take her to that next step without taking away the fact that she is Alice. So I don't know. And I think that was pretty much it. I don't really have too many complaints about this episode.
Yeah, I feel like Alice wanting to skip all the hard work and just take a buzzer to her brain to solve her problems is not character development for her. And I also just think that the idea of, you know, the buzzer, it's a little bit, it happened a little bit with Mary, because Ryan and Luke were like, oh, that, but that wasn't you. She's like, I killed him, Mary. He's like, but it wasn't you. I love her, Your Honor. And it's just like, but it doesn't solve, you know, Mary's problem. It doesn't bring that little kid's, like, dad back. And it just kind of seems like with the buzzer, they're going to, quote, unquote, cure. The plan is to cure Marcus. But does that undo him murdering his father? No. So I'm a little bit weary of the joy buzzer just being like a, you know, get out of jail free card kind of situation where it's like, oh, he's cured now, and not really taking accountability for anything that you did when you were, when he was this Marcus or when Alice is this Alice. So, and then we also see her use the buzzer in the promo. So I'm assuming that there's some kind of like twist to that or whatever, because I just feel like that's a super major part. That's like the whole part of the episode. The whole plot is to get the joy buzzer and use it. So I don't know. I hope there's a twist, because I feel like if she, like, it doesn't work or something, because if it does, then it's just like, well, you just told me the whole plot in the trailer there, kids. So.
Yeah, that's true.
While I agree with the joy buzzer thing, I guess my only thing to say to that would be like, I guess that would just put them, not Alice, like Alice just shouldn't use it at all, because she's already kind of on her way to, you know, she obviously can control herself to whatever degree. So like, it's not even necessary. It's only there as a dilemma for Mary, but the solution should just be, well, Alice doesn't actually need it. She's already doing the work. So like, to whatever degree, not obviously not as much as she wants to cheat, but she has the ability mentally to do the work, which Marcus, we assume, does not, right? So Marcus getting the joy buzzer would then, Joker buzzer, why I keep saying joy buzzer, would then put him, I assume, I would say, where Mary is now, right? Like, okay, my brain is functioning properly now, but I have done all these things, even if people tell me it wasn't me. But anyway, that's not my, that was not my complaint. Those are just my thoughts based on the thoughts that you just thought in. So my only real complaint is that I feel like Ryan should know not to pair Alice up with Mary at this point in time. Like, yes, Alice seems like she like cares about Mary, she's looking out for Mary, but like, Mary was literally just Poison Mary like 3 days ago, and Alice was enabling that behavior up until whatever line was crossed. So like, why would you be like, yes, recently rehabilitated Mary, please go out with your psycho sister Alice. That sounds like a great, to find another psycho with a joker button that can turn you into a psycho or not. So like, all of this seemed like not a good idea. It makes sense emotionally and, you know, for the Alice and Mary story, but I just don't think that it makes sense like logistically, like from Ryan's perspective. It was just like a tactical error, if you will. And then this is like a smaller complaint. It's not like not a real complaint, but like normally when an actor is directing the episode, they get taken out for the most part. And you're like, wow, what a big difference. I see how much less of that actor I have now because of the directing. But with Luke / cameras directing, there was no difference because Luke does so little in the first place. So I was like, that's so sad that I did not miss Luke in this episode, because that's about how much he's in every episode. So there you go.
You make a valid point there.
I did think, it was like, wow, this is great that he didn't have to, you know, skip this episode just because he was directing. And then, you know, but wow, that's the same amount of time that he has every time. So I guess you do have a point there, Tati.
Thank you. Although, hopefully, you know, that will change in next season. So, feedback?
Yes. Sonia says, hey, ladies. Yet another great Batwoman episode. Maybe all the DC TV shows should do shortened seasons, because there are no boring filler episodes and all the episodes have such high stakes. Poor Mary having this existential crisis about being the one to tell Marcus, Ryan, and Luke's secret, and also bring part of the reason why her clinic flooded in the first place, and then her guilt over the man that she inadvertently killed. Can someone please give her a hug? Mary gave the AI to Marcus to hurt Luke. You can tell it was like, when was that something weird happened? Okay. So yeah, Mary gave
the heart for Luke to forgive her, like when
I said I wanted more help.
Your microphone is cutting out in and out, Jess.
Okay. Mary gave the AI to Marcus to hurt Luke, and you can tell it was so hard for Luke to forgive her. Like, when I said I wanted more Hamilflex scenes, this is not what I meant. Oh, my God. Marcus being all, we need to help the mentally ill in Arkham reminds me of the guy who had the Mad Hatter's hat about how mentally ill are treated so badly. Of course, Marcus is doing that as a cover to get Arkham's worst criminals out in the street again, but still. Alice telling Mary to bury her feelings and justify her actions, and Mary being all, but I'm not a psychopath, LMAO. Side note, but did anyone else think the actress playing Kiki / Kathleen had some similarities in her mannerisms and the way that she talked and whatnot with the actress who played Renee, or was it just me? That's interesting. Let's see. Interesting to see Jada's side of the whole giving up Ryan thing and how she's always meant for her to go to a loving family, and now she had no idea that she ended up in the foster care system. Harley Quinn name drop. I've said this so many times before, but all the Easter eggs in this season have been great. Love how Ryan was like, Gotham will see what I've made of my life with nothing, and how you've done shit with all the everything that you have. Like, yes, girl, tell him. Love seeing Mary get to kick ass during that fight scene, even though it was pretty minimal. It was nice to see, though. And that was good when both sets of teams just like, you know, Marcus like, I have you surrounded. And they're like, no, you don't. You know, so that was fun. Lucius Fox AI telling Luke that he's proud of him. Yay. And also yay for Luke finally realizing he's a hero in and out of the suit.
Love that for Luke.
Yes. I get why Alice wants the joy buzzer, but we don't even know if the joy buzzer would work on Alice. I thought the only reason it would work on Marcus is because he's already been buzzed with it once, so it negate the first buzz and make him go back to normal. We have no idea what the buzzer would do to Alice, so I hope Mary finds out some other way to help Alice and Alice doesn't betray Ryan again. Wildmore, yay, perfect end to the episode. And then we have Anita. Anita returned. Hello. Anita says, happy Black History Month, ladies of gumption. Woohoo! Tis the season for Black excellence, and Broken Toys did not disappoint. Batwoman came roaring into Black History Month with an episode that wiped the floor of all doubt as to who's in charge around Gotham. First, I really enjoyed Ryan and Jada's standoff with the bargain bin Killmonger. them wearing mother-daughter blazers that were nearly identical. Maybe it signaled the parallels that were drawn between them. And in a way, I hope that what Jada said to Ryan about how much she accomplished with nothing inspires Ryan to see higher levels of greatness in herself. Sometimes she doubts herself even when we're all rooting for her. But oh my gosh, Ryan has the best identity reveals, does she not? The mix of relief, shock, pride, regret, and love on Jada's face was everything. Robin Givens was a good score for the show. We suspected it last season, but now it's clear. Sophie is bat sexual.
that's accurate and hilarious.
Did you cackle when Luke realized that Principal Sophie was into bad girl Ryan way before she became Batwoman? I did. Cackling as I typed this. I thought I saw her eyeing Ryan in season 2 when she was supposed to be welcoming Kate home, but it was none of my business. I wonder how Sophie's going to move forward with the group. She was a crow. They were corrupt, but honestly, any quasi-police agency should exist in Gotham. Sophie should be in it. But just because she's independent of them now, does that mean that she's comfortable working with a couple of murder sisters? If there will be clashes here, I'm there tuning in. Why do counselors, especially reformed addicts, always seem to wear knit V-neck cardigans? Is there something about that cell that says, I've changed, but I'm down to get in trouble if stress comes knocking? But for all the top-tier acting and Cameron's genius directing, this bit of writing made me literally clap in my seat. The moment you say my name, all of Gotham will know how much I accomplished with nothing and how little you accomplished with everything. Now, that is a woman whom any fictional character, and maybe some real-life ones, would follow to the ends of the earth. And then finally, we have Suara, who says, damn, Batwoman, this episode was fantastic on virtually all cylinders. Cameras did a superb job directing, and especially loved the camera angles and switches he used. Ryan really fully confronting Jada, was excellent, and GVC and Robin were amazing in all their scenes. I'm even more intrigued now in Ryan's parentage, and honestly more convinced now that her father is actually Lucius Fox. It would presumably be someone high profile enough that Jada would want to hide an affair with for whatever reason. Plus, it would also make for excellent drama with Luke. Speaking of which, Luke getting to hear his AI father say he was proud of him. My heart. Mary feeling sincere remorse in the weight of what she's done and wanting to put in the work. Yes, excellent. Nicole's really shining this season, as is Rachel, and their dynamic remains incredibly fascinating and compelling. Also, Judy Reyes was fantastic as Kiki Roulette. It's a Scrubs reunion in the Arrowverse. Side note, Donald was perfect for Legends. I'm so excited. Nick was great as Marcus descends and further into villainy, and I'm so nervously excited for what he'll do next. But last but certainly not least, let's go Wildmore. Damn, the writers went all in for this relationship. Batwoman is truly the cream of the amazing crop that has been DC TV this season, and I hope it continues to stay up there. Thanks, guys. That's it.
Love it. Gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss. All right. So do we have predictions?
I don't. You know, it makes sense that it might be Lucius, but then also just like Lucius had a family.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Lucius's family factor doesn't exist.
That would be like such pain for Luke. That's so like.
Yeah, because he idolizes his dad.
Yeah. But it would also kind of explain the focus of that, you know, the fact that we are bringing that in. Because, like, imagine Luke having a conversation with his dad's AI about the fact that he had cheated on his mom and had Ryan. I don't know. It's interesting, but upsetting.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if it's not Lucius, he would be the most shocking choice.
It can't be a rando, so, I mean...
Right, exactly. And I feel like Luke doesn't... Like, we don't really know anything about his mom or sisters or anything like that. And the fact that they do make his relationship with his dad so crucial, like, that's really...
Yeah, you know, I feel like it has to be bad. There.
So, it would be interesting. Mm-hmm. I know. And I feel like it would be interesting because he idolizes his dad... I feel like discovering that his dad was as much a human being as anybody else would be a journey for him to take, you know?
It's a possibility.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I don't have any predictions about, you know, well, I've said my thing about, like, Marcus being cured with a buzzer and that just being like, wow, thanks, guys. And, you know.
Right.
It would be something if he voluntarily checked himself in to... jail, but I don't know if they're going to do that. I don't know if Jada will let him do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so do we have ladies with gumption of the week?
Naomi is hard because it's just Naomi like all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like Esme. Like, you know, I don't think it's going to Naomi anyway, but I feel like the school president that actually cared about her peers' health to get them healthy snacks. Them snacks are probably expensive. Like, healthy snacks are expensive. She was trying to, like, upgrade y'all. So I feel like she should get a nod because, you know, they did not give her any respect.
I am here for it. I think that that works for me.
Definitely Ryan for Batwoman.
Yes.
For Legends.
Gideon. Yeah, Gideon did shut that down. So of those three, who do we think wins? Ryan, Gideon, or Esme?
Ryan, for me.
Are you leaning towards Gideon, or was that a
kind of? I was kind of leaning towards Gideon.
Okay. So, rap battle.
Well, Ryan, because she had to overcome a lot of things in this episode. Mm-hmm. Personally,
she has to overcome a lot of things every episode.
That's true. But I feel like especially now she is actually confronting them in that, like, she actually did let down her walls. She actually did stand up to her mom and tell her, like, that's no excuse. You could have checked up on me. And went into physical battle. But I feel like personally, emotionally, she had a lot to deal with and she was able to overcome all of the things that she's been holding back on the last several episodes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there was like two very big instances of her really bearing her soul, coming clean, facing things head on that she normally tries to avoid. So I did root for her a lot in this episode. I was very proud of her for that. And the Gideon side, the Gideon verse.
I would just say for the Gideon side, I think that like the whole episode, she was trying to be proactive. I think, you know, if we're talking about the journey over the couple of episodes coming, she's been dealing with like her humanity and becoming more human and what that means to her and what it means for her to be a legend. And, you know, going from planning the whole charade about luring the legends back to that time point to wanting to be more involved. They feel more like her family now. And in this episode, she was really trying to be proactive, and Gideon, Asher is like, you know, sidelining her a bit because of the whole situation of being scared for her. But Gideon was the crucial point in saving half of the Legends team and ultimately Sarah from being stuck in the past. She had that kind of conversation with Astra about their relationship and how much Astra means to her as well. And then I think she kind of had like the heroes, like the whole thing where, you know, they have like the biggest big moment before something bad happens. She had like a more of an emotional kind of ending, we'll say, to her having like a epiphany of like being part of the team and being accepted, and then
and this could be the last time.
Well, it's not gonna be last. It's not gonna be the last time. It's only so devastating that she was stabbed because she had reached a point where she had grown so much.
Agreed.
So it was an earned stab.
It was an earned stab. I don't know.
Where do you go from here?
Yeah, exactly. Are you convinced, Nay? Is that are you still rooting for
opinion, Kathy?
I don't having opinions. I hate opinions. I think that we're all ladies with gumption. No. If I had to choose one, I guess that the gumption, like, even though I feel more like I was like prouder of Ryan overall, right? Like, I feel like it was like a really strong episode for her, emotionally speaking. I do think that the gumption, like in terms of like the definition of gumption, like I would give it to Gideon. Mm-hmm. Based on Jessica's wonderful argument.
And Ryan will still be, you know, open and growing in her season finale. So
that's true. This is true. So thank you all for listening to us discuss our DC TV shows. I believe next week we will have none. We will only have Encanto, but it will be enchanting to discuss Encanto with you. And we look forward to that on our Patreon. In the meantime, we are the latest Gumption. We recap DC TV No Flash. You can find us at DCTV Gumption on Twitter. Email us at ladieswgumption@gmail.com or Tumblr us. ladieswgumption.
Tumble with us.
.tumblr.com. And wherever your podcasts can be found. Same bat time, same bat place next week, but outside of the bats, because we will be talking about Encanto.
Outside the bat cave, yep.
Exactly. Bye.
Bye. Bye.